Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep St. Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep St. Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Peep St. Pandemonium for May 3rd, 2012. And we are your hosts, as always. We've actually got all three of us this week, Jerry Oates, Bobby Simmons, and myself, Michael Norris. Welcome back, Jerry. I guess you got all your paperwork filed so you can run for mayor of Tybee Island now.
Yes, sir. It's all been filed, and I'm going to have you and Bobby handle my campaign for me. So,
what's your position pay? About $11,000 a year?
Yeah, and they put mag wheels on the golf cart that you ride around on, so it's, you know.
I think y'all do it upright. Just whatever you think, I'll go for it.
Well, we missed you last week.
Well, I missed you guys.
Yeah, I was going into the DTs, man. After having been gone to Vegas for a week and putting up with that foolishness.
Well, you went to Vegas and I went to Tybee, I mean, so.
Hey.
And I wound up in New Jersey. I think I got the short end of the
stick. Well, I think we, did we get around or what?
Well, I'm driving in the morning up to Corbin, Kentucky to do a wedding on Saturday. I told my wife, I said, I'm on tour.
Are you a traveling minister now, Bobby?
Well, a friend of mine that I've known for some time, her daughter's getting married, and the daughter asked me 9 months ago if I would do the ceremony, and I in a moment of weakness, said I would.
And may I ask, where's Corbin, Kentucky?
It's about 50 miles north of Knoxville. So probably about a 4.5-hour ride.
Are they going to be wearing overalls at this one too?
Listen, I just hope we don't. I just hope it's not up in the hills where they're going to bring the snakes out or something. You know.
No, that, I don't think it'll be that long for you, Bobby. Knoxville's 200.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I mean, I can go from here to Cleveland in 2 hours, and it's less than an hour to Knoxville from Cleveland. And then however long it takes me to go 50 miles. It's 9 miles off the exit off the interstate, so it's not, I don't think it's going to be that bad.
Yeah, but trust me, depending on the roads and the scenery, 9 miles can seem like 100.
There's no doubt about that.
You must have been to West Virginia in your lifetime.
I've been through there.
Oh, geez.
Last summer when I started this job, I went through, I think I went through 8 or 9 states from the time I left Mobile to the time I landed in Poughkeepsie, New York.
You mean for your first gig?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something. It's like working for Watts.
Yeah, I thought about you. I almost called your brother-in-law and see if I could stay overnight at his house in Virginia, but I didn't get that far. I slept at a truck stop in Virginia. I couldn't even tell you the name of the town I was in.
Boy, I'll tell you. Are y'all doing good business, Mike?
Yeah, we've been doing pretty good. I'm hoping this town generally has poor sellouts for the shows that they do here, and I'm hoping I don't break that routine. But I went, I set up all my ticket outlets. Well, two of them I set up last Saturday, and the third one, which is also our sponsor, I set up on Monday night, and they started selling tickets last night. And I went by there to carry the guy some stuff, and he had them lined up. That's a
really
good sign.
Wonderful.
Yeah. mean, this is a nice little. It's an older area, but people think you hear New Jersey and you think of places like Newark and the bigger cities, but this is actually, for square miles, this is the largest city in New Jersey. For
really?
Square mile. But the population here is only 60,000.
What's the temperature up there? Is it cool up there?
It's been overcast for most of the time I've been up here, but it's been anywhere from, low 80s during the day to, low 70s, just depending on whether or not it's cloudy or rainy. It's been not real rainy, but just kind of overcast and misty the last couple of days. And I think the high today was like 76, something like that. But it's been nice.
It was warm here today. How about up there, Bobby?
Yes. I saw a thermometer on a bank or something coming home, and it said 90.
Yeah.
And that was about 4:30, quarter to 5.
Yeah, my daughter
was probably pretty close.
I was asking Bobby before we came on the air whether or not it was expected to rain down that way this weekend, because my daughter's graduation is actually outside, and it's 3.5 hours long. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'll be ready for air conditioning by the time we get.
You know, I think the weather's supposed to be nice, isn't it, Bobby?
Yeah, I talked to a couple of folks here about 30 minutes ago, and they said it was raining on the west side of town, so I don't know if we're going to get any showers tonight or not, but I haven't heard anything about it raining all weekend.
This has been the first time I've flown in probably 20 years, too, so I'm not overly thrilled about that,
I don't care nothing about that anymore. I'm done.
Listen, I'm going to tell y'all something. It is such a hassle. It is such a hassle. You have to, you take your shoes off, you take your belt off, you have to empty your pockets. It's just absolutely horrible. Atlanta's bad enough, but Vegas is the worst airport I've ever been in. I mean, it's you don't think you're ever going to get through there.
How long do you have to get there before you board?
We got to the airport in Atlanta, we got there about an hour and 45 minutes ahead of our flight. We flew out at 8:30 on a Saturday morning, so it really wasn't that bad, crowd-wise when we got there. But coming out of Vegas, we left Vegas at 11 o'clock their time, and, of course, it's like herding cattle out there. It's just,
yeah.
it's horrible.
My flight tomorrow out of Philly is at 11:50. And then my flight out of Atlanta on Sunday is around 10:45, something like that. No, maybe a little bit later, maybe afternoon. I'm supposed to get back about 3. And I'm supposed to land down there at 2 tomorrow. Of course, I got to get my rental car and then drive to Macon and then check into the hotel. And then I'll ease over to Milledgeville sometime tomorrow evening. We're all going out to the Thai restaurant for dinner tomorrow night. Oh, I'm interested. Looking forward to that.
Me and Debbie are, we've been discussing, maybe toward the end of the year, we've been thinking about buying one of those Kia Souls. And so for this little trip tomorrow, I decided to rent a car. And I specifically asked for a Kia Soul, because I wanted to drive one out on the road just to see how they rode. So when I went to pick it up today, the guy goes, "Well, I'm sorry, we don't have any." He said, "But we're going to upgrade you." And I said, "Well, okay." So I am driving a 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee. And I think I've changed my mind about the Kia Soul, and now I want a Jeep Grand Cherokee. But somebody told me they cost $40,000, so I don't think I want one that bad.
It depends on which one you get.
Well, this thing here, man, this one I got will do everything but talk to you. And it'll probably talk to you if I knew how to operate it.
I've owned two Cherokees in my life. I love both of them. my daughter ended up with the last one that we own, her first car. And she's traded again. I should have thought about it. I could have had Jerry meet me at the Atlanta airport, and I could have driven his. What is it? You have a Prius?
Yes, sir.
Probably wouldn't have filled the gas.
You could have gone to Philly and back.
What's gas like down there? I filled up today. It was $3.59, the cheapest I've seen it up here, and that's full service.
I've seen it today for $3.55.
Yeah.
It's $3.76 here.
It was $3.89 in Atlanta when I was down there before I headed out. That's about what it was in North Carolina, but it's been a lot cheaper here. Plus, you don't have to get out and pump it yourself.
You're kidding me.
No. Everything in New Jersey is full service, sir. Even the convenience.
I haven't seen one of those, and I could tell you when.
Sure, they don't even let you get out of your car. You pull up, and they pump it for you, and run your credit card through the machine. You don't do anything.
Have you seen one lately, Bobby, up there?
No, I don't know of any in Atlanta.
I don't either.
The only time I saw them last year was in New Jersey when I was standing in Cherry Hill. Everywhere in the whole state of New Jersey, well, I think it's a law that they have here that everything has to be full service.
I didn't even know anything like that existed anymore.
Yep.
No idea.
Even more convenience stores.
Yeah, my kids think I'm a dinosaur when I tell them about somebody checking your oil and wiping your windshield and doing that sort of stuff.
Well, they don't go through all that. They just pump the gas.
Yeah, but I remember when they did.
Oh, yeah. You always got a glass or a dish of some sort, too, a little fill-up.
Yeah, and they gave away coupons for a drawing for a new car or, you know, whatever.
We're telling our age, guys. Oh.
How much gas you burn a week, Bobby?
Well, I'm fortunate that I get to drive the company van 3 or 4 days a week most weeks because I make deliveries either on the way home or to the office in the morning before I get there. And if I do that, they let me keep it. But if I drive every day my vehicle, my pickup gets 20 miles to the gallon, and it's 94 miles round trip every day. So that's 5 gallons a day or $100 a week, pretty much.
Who would ever dream that?
Oh, listen. If gas had been what it costs now, we would have never bought this house in 2000 when we bought it. But hindsight, as they say, is 20/20.
That's it.
So.
My dad was alive.
Well, Mr. Geigel said to you hello. Hopefully he will call you, sir.
I hope so. I'd love
his table was next to ours at the banquet. And as I say, he's hard hearing. So anytime anybody said anything, you could hear Bob going, "What'd they say? Huh? What?" But they honored... They honored the TV commentator from out there, Jerry.
Bill Kirsten.
Bill Kirschner. What's his last name? Kirschman?
Kirsten.
He's got to be 80-something.
Yeah, he has to be.
And he's very, you know, he just barely can move. You know, he just kind of dawdles along. But evidently the signature thing was the screaming, "Hello, wrestling fans." But he showed he'd cut loose with one.
He was a good guy.
He still got it. Harley Race introduced him, and Harley said, you know, he said there's a lot of guys did it a lot of different ways, but he said, and of course I never heard him do a show, but they said this guy was as good as anybody that ever did it.
He was very good. He was very good.
We used to talk to another person that Jerry, I'm sure, is familiar with from his time out in Kansas City. That Bobby, I've got to get his phone number from you so we can try and line him up for the show. And that's Percival A. Friend.
Yeah, Al. Al said he'd be glad to do it. Great, funny guy. Oh God, he's funny.
Mike Norris was supposed to send me somebody's number, and he never did.
Who?
Lucas.
I sent you his number?
No, sir, you did
not. It was probably in the email with a picture of you with some loud pants on, and you couldn't get past the picture.
I couldn't get past the picture either. I mean, I didn't see the number.
I'll send it to you. I'm still working on trying to get him on the show. He wants to do it, but he can't tell me for sure, you know, when you're going to be available. So, you remember the night a few weeks ago? It's just been a couple months ago now that I kept fiddling with the switchboard trying to call somebody back. I told you if that was Ken, he was going to pull a rib on you. And it didn't work for some reason. I dialed with his number and it rang through the Bill Bowman's phone number.
That was the rib, right?
Yeah.
The rib was actually on you, Michael. You just didn't get it.
Yeah, that rib was on me.
Speaking of ribs, I saw on Facebook today Morgan Dollar, who is a member of the board of directors, the executive board of Cauliflower Alley Club. He announced on Facebook today that Renegade T-Shirt and Printing Company and Cauliflower Alley Club had reached an agreement in principle on being the new supplier of T-shirts. So that was kind of exciting news today.
I saw that.
And it was right there on Facebook for everybody to read.
Yep. Right under the picture of Charlie.
Yeah, right there. Yeah, it would have been right next to a picture of Charlie Smith. It sure was. Wasn't that a wild-looking bunch sitting there selling them T-shirts?
I didn't recognize the lady that was sitting there with you guys.
She is she does some work for Greg Price on the fan fest things, and she sat there with us for a couple of days and just listened and told some stories herself. But yeah, she's from North Carolina. And,
I thought maybe that was Gene Bennett's paramour that he met up.
No, she didn't show up this year. He did not show up. He wore his still receiving T-shirt Monday, and she was not there. Kind of sad.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to say that poor girl could stand in Kansas City and see both coasts, looking straight ahead, but with the opposite eyes. And she thought Gene was Gene Anderson. It was the funniest thing you've ever seen.
That wasn't Guillotine Gordon's sister, was it?
Oh, geez. Listen, this girl told Gene, I'm sitting there with Gene's wife, Janice. She's sitting next to me, and Gene was standing behind us. And the girl actually thought it was Gene Anderson. She says, you don't remember me? She said, you used to come over to my apartment. I used to entertain you. She said, are you still receiving? And Gene went, yeah, I'm still receiving. She said, well, come on, I want you to meet my daddy. And took it, and Gene followed her. They walked off. I told Janice, I said, where is he going? She said, I don't know, but I hope he stays. So me and Charlie had him a T-shirt made up that said, still receiving on it. And he was all ready for it, and she didn't show up.
You see what we missed, Jerry, by not going out to Las Vegas?
Evidently. Oh, geez, listen. I'm telling you, it's so funny. That's why I like sitting there with Charlie selling T-shirts, because I mean, it's like people just come. I mean, you know, they all flock to that room, so you don't have to go look for nobody. All the weirdos just come right through there. It's really neat. Oh.
Oh, man. I'm definitely going to have to make that the one you need. I'm going to make sure Jerry comes with me. If Bowman hits the big one, we'll all go. He's already said he'll take me. I'll squeeze you in there too, Jerry.
Yeah, that'll work.
Bowman tells me every time I talk to him, now if I hit the big one, we're going to Vegas. I said, well, that's fine. That'll work. But anyway, I'm going to take us a quick break. Whenever I get back, we will get our special guest on the line tonight, Randy Colley, the man of many identities, many faces, and all of them good. He was one of those guys that kind of like Charlie Fulton and guys like that that were always kind of overlooked, and not a lot of people, you know, Well, his thing was he had so many gimmicks he worked. Nobody could ever pin him down into, as to who he was. But looking forward to talking to Randy. Randy's a great guy. And we'll be back in just a minute with him on the line with us. We'll take us a break real quick.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Some voiceovers of Freddie Miller and add them onto our intro here. I think about him every time I hear that music on that bumper coming back in. You guys still there? Did I lose you?
Yes, sir.
We're here.
Okay, just checking to make sure.
We're right here with you, brother.
Well, hang on. It's going to be bumpy, I think, because I'm about to use this switchboard thing again. So we'll see. Oh, man.
Can you call Alabama from New Jersey?
I don't know. I called Canada last week from New Jersey, so I'm assuming Alabama will work.
Yeah, but you're closer to Canada than you are.
Well, that's true. Not a good sign. The same dialing, but I don't hear it. Oh, great.
What's that number? BR549?
Hello? All right. This thing's not working. Hello? I think he hung up. Well, you know, it's just my luck. This thing worked for 4 months, and then all of a sudden it's not working. I hate technology.
Check.
Hello?
May I speak to Randy, please?
He is not at home.
Okay. I'll try him on his cell phone. This is Michael North from Peace State Pandemonium. He was going to do our show tonight, so...
I talked to him just a bit ago, and he's on the road, but he said he had the show to do at 7, but you've got his cell phone, right?
Yeah, I've got his cell phone. I'll call him there. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
We might could have got more interesting stories talking to her about Randy.
Good hell. I better call her back. Bobby, did the Falcons do any good in the draft?
I'm not real sure. they drafted a center, which is probably and they say he's pretty good. He's out of Wisconsin, which is probably a good thing since McClure is probably on his last year, maybe. We'll see.
Hello? Randy.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it's Michael, Jerry, and Bobby. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Doing fine. Welcome to Peace State Pandemonium. We just had to talk to your wife, and I had to talk these two out of not doing the show with her. get better stories out of her.
Yeah, I just told her we get better stories from her about you than you'll tell us.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I had to go to Tennessee and pick up my granddaughter, and my daughter-in-law was in a car accident, and so it's kind of been real iffy. Nobody knew very much till she kind of got home, and I said, I'll just take the baby back to Alabama with me, so that's going to help out a good bit.
Yeah, hopefully everything's all right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. She got up today and walked about 10 feet, so, you know.
That's good.
It's for the walker, but, you know, to have your back broken and be walking a couple of days later. So, anyway, it's a miracle. You know, they can do some amazing stuff in the hospitals now.
Oh.
Unbelievable. Well, you know Bobby Simmons. Have you ever crossed paths with Jerry Oates?
Yeah, I did. I know Jerry
Oates
real well.
Sure did.
You still willing to talk to him?
Yeah. Sure.
He broke my back.
Oh, man.
Just a joke. I might have broken your back, Randy.
Oh, man, yeah. I remember I went to a chiropractor one time in New York when I was up there. Actually, it was in Connecticut. And he says, when did you break your back? I said, I didn't never know it was broken. I remember it hurt one time really bad and it was my last night. And I laid on the couch for about 2 weeks, couldn't hardly get up and walk or do anything. It finally got better. And I just, you know how you just suck it up and go? The vertebrae was splintered on one side.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So, I've seen guys, like, if they sneeze, well, I got to have a day off. They're like, wait a minute, I work with broken bones, torn cartilage,
Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked about that on the show, and they don't, people today don't understand that, but we were scared somebody would take our spot if we didn't show up.
Yeah.
You went to work.
Yeah. I know in Atlanta one time, one of the doctors there, when I was working with doing the assassin thing with a local guy there, and I'd hurt my back in Griffin, Georgia, of all places, and I made it to the Omni, and the doctor gave me some pain pills, a little triangle-looking shape on one side, and I showed it to the chiropractor, and he said, how many of them you take to get to the ring? I said, I got to have two of them. He said, three of them, we can operate on you.
Can you get any more of those, Randy?
No. And it was awful because I had to ride in the back of the car on my hands and knees to the chiropractor.
Oh,
it took the whole neighborhood to get me out of the basement. I got down there and couldn't get out the next morning. Took the whole neighborhood to get me out of the basement and into the car. And my wife took me to the chiropractor, riding in the back seat of the car on my hands and knees. So it wasn't a pleasant week, you know.
Oh, jeez.
Unbelievable. Well, how did you get involved in the wrestling business, Randy?
I was too lazy to work.
And too nervous to steal.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't smart enough to be a crook, and I was too lazy to work, so, you know, I didn't leave a whole lot of opportunities.
Oh, man.
So what kind of stories do you want?
Well, just in general, where did you start out at? What was your first territory?
I started out, of all places, and my first match was in Jackson, Georgia, and my last match was in Jackson, Mississippi. And I tried to work in Alabama as much as I could. You know, that's where I'm from, so.
Right.
I tried to stay. It was kind of hard to do because it just seemed like going off. I worked in 28 countries, I think, and 49 states.
Jeez.
Yeah. So
that was just what?
Who did you work for in Jackson, Georgia?
In Happy Humphrey.
Oh, jeez.
That's been a long time back. Huh?
That's where I'm living now, is Jackson, Georgia.
Jackson, Georgia. Oh,
yep,
I'll be dog.
Yep, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Who
am I speaking to here?
This Bobby.
Oh, Bobby. Hey, how you doing? I called you a few days ago.
Well, I had my cell phone off, and I seen it on Monday, and I told my wife, I said, I think this was Randy calling me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was in your wife's name.
Yeah. 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 You know what? I had a birthday yesterday of 62 years old. I cannot hardly believe it.
Mm.
Of all things, you know. I never thought I was
living. As Jerry Oates.
Huh?
I said, you're almost as old as Jerry Oates.
Yeah. I thought somebody would have killed me before now.
You know, people that don't know him won't appreciate this, but being partners with Larry Latham and making it to 62, that's a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah, I thought so, too. You know, for as many years as we was together, you know, and all the places we went to the world, we was in South Africa together, all over the Middle East, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Kuwait, Oman, Jordan, all through there, and Australia, Japan, everywhere. You know, when you hit the ground running, you know, you just got a handful of plane tickets and didn't know where you was going to end up until the month was over.
Well, he didn't run into any blind men out there while you were with him, did he? Bobby, if Larry didn't tell you that story, Bobby would have to tell you that story about Larry and the blind man.
Oh.
That, he told me about beating up that blind man. That's the funniest thing I ever heard.
Oh.
God.
That's got to be bad.
He said the more he hit the guy, he said the braver he got. He said, this guy ain't fighting back. He must know I'm a professional wrestler. He said he just bowed up and just hit him again. And he said an hour later, the sheriff knocked on the door and arrested him for beating up a blind man.
Oh, man. Oh, God. I tell you a story that this was a little spot show. I was working for Nick Gulas, and this was back in pretty early 70s, 74, right along in there. I ain't been working very long, and it was just you made Chattanooga TV, Chattanooga house show, and then you had to go to a house match that night in a little spot show not far from Chattanooga, so I can't remember where it was at. But, and they got the money's worth out of it in them days. And the guy hit me on the back just with an open-handed slap, just pow! I'm talking about it hurt so bad, and I turned around, and he gave me a grin, and I slapped him, and when his wheelchair turned over, they was two nubs in the air. And I went, oh, man. And, but it just was one of them things that happened so quick. I just got that real strap on the back, and I turned around, and he was giving me that grin, and I slapped him, and it was bad. Yeah, the whole place got so quiet. We heard a pin drop, and everybody screaming.
Oh.
Now, where did you and Jim Dalton first hook up?
That was late 74, early 75, around in there.
So you guys were early, because you guys were in Mobile together in 70 and 71.
Yeah, yeah. We got back together for a little while, and not for long, you know. It was just a kind of short thing, you know.
And you guys worked, I know you worked in Mobile territory, and you worked in Tennessee some together, and then also in Florida. Let me ask you something, and you may not remember this, but there was a team in Tampa, and then back again in Mobile, within a couple months of each other, there was a mass team called the Outlaws, and they seemed to disappear, and then you guys showed up, and I've often wondered if that was you and Jim under hood.
I must be in a bad location right here. I was having a hard time hearing you. Do what now?
I was saying there was a team called the Outlaws in Tampa and in Mobile that weren't there very long, but then they disappeared and you guys showed up, and I've often wondered if that was you and Jim working under hood. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it may have.
Yeah, the Outlaws, I don't know what happened to them. They wasn't there for very long, but that was Jim's brother. That was his partner in 71, and he kind of, I can't remember, I think he got a broken arm or something like that to happen to him, or he just wasn't interested. I don't know what the complete story was. Anyway, I thought I was going to just start wrestling down in Montgomery, Alabama, and I got there, and they said, "You're Jack Dalton." I went, "What?" "Here's your partner, your brother Jim." I went, "Oh, man." "All righty, then. I'll just be easy to get along with." It got to the point to where I could go through Atlanta Airport and somebody would holler a name out. Didn't matter what it was. I'd look around. Oh, man.
And then back into Mobile in 77, which is when you and Bobby worked against each other. They were calling you the real Rip Tyler.
Yeah.
That always seemed like an odd angle to me.
It did to me, too.
Real Rip Tyler booked.
Yeah, the real Rip Tyler. And you know what was funny? I did that little thing as real Rip Tyler there, and it wasn't a great run. It was all right. But, you know, for there, I guess it was good. And then, like, a few months after that, I come back in there with Roger Smith as an assassin.
Yeah.
So, you know, and nobody knew any difference, I don't guess.
And you and Roger were working for, when Fuller reopened the territory in 78 as the assassins, and had, with Rip for a while, and then you were with Billy Spears there.
Yeah. Yeah. Rip Tyler going back a long way. Yeah, he was Rip Tyler. I went from being a real Rip Tyler to Rip Tyler was managing me and Roger, and then we got Billy Spears. Sure did. That's
when
all back.
Roger jumped ship, and you ended up with Kurt Von Hess as the assassin.
Yep. Me and Roger was the first team that went to. We left there and went to Memphis, Tennessee, when Robert left and wanted me and Roger to go to Memphis, Tennessee with him. We went up there. And that's when we got Gorgeous George Jr. for a manager. He was managing Mongolian Stomper, and then he was also managing me and Roger. So everything worked out pretty good.
Where all did you work with Jody as the assassins? I know George.
Mostly just Atlanta.
Really?
Well, we worked Atlanta and Tampa, flew back and forth from Tampa some of the shows back when Eddie Graham was living.
Then me and Larry worked at the Carolinas for a while, you know, like out of Georgia.
Right. And then, I know one time you guys will get a kick out of this. Randy was Dusty Rhodes for a night.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. Uvalde Slim.
Uvalde Slim. Not many people remember that, you know. And I almost left that night. It was in the Omni, and I seen Roger Smith come in, and he had the assassin outfit on, and he started getting dressed. And I was looking. I went, "Yeah, what's going on here?" You know, I seen Jody getting dressed, and I seen Roger getting dressed, and everybody's coming over talking to them, and I'm kind of getting left out. So I kind of got my bag, and I was headed out to my car. I said, "Well, I can see the writings on the wall right here." And I was on the way out, and Charlie Fulton was hollering, hey, Dusty's looking for you. And I went, what? No, I'm gone, man. No, they want you in there, really. So I went back in, and that's when they had the outfit, and you've already slimmed tonight. It was just seconds away from me being out of sight. I was just thinking that if that door would have closed, you know, just like the big double doors there, so it was an Omni. Yep. If that thing would have closed and they didn't see me, Charlie Fulton didn't see me, and nobody would have called me back, I would have been gone. Because they was just, you know, nobody told me anything about it. It was a big secret, so. I was almost gone. It was going to be a big secret because I was almost out the door. I tell you what, that was one of the best nights that I think I've ever had. I was working with Ole Anderson that night, and I remember it just like it was yesterday. He said, "I don't have to get in the ring because Dusty Rhodes is not sitting at ringside." And I did the little Dusty Rhodes imitation and pointed at the back door, and the spotlight hit Dusty coming down the aisle. And Ole had to get in the ring, and so the Omni went wild. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun. Go ahead.
Then you and Larry hooked up as the Moondogs. What was the first territory you guys did that? Memphis?
No, New York.
New York, you were up there first? Well, then
yeah,
you were Sailor King.
Yeah, me and Sailor White was a major. I started making TV up there. My first TV, I was Ripper Hawkins. And, of course, they always give you a name. They're going to make you whatever they want to when you get there. And they said, you know, "Can we change your name?" And I said, "Sure." Because I've been working under a mask in Atlanta with Jody. And they said, "Well, we're going to change your name to Ripper Hawkins." I said, "Well, okay. That's fine." And next TV, I went up there and they said, "We need a tag team." I said, "Okay, so what are you talking about?" And they said, "Well, this guy from Canada is going to come down, and they wanted us to wear the red, white, and blue and all different loud colors and stuff like that, but copy of the Valiant Brothers." And I said, "That's just not my personality, and I don't know about this other guy." I said, "But it's certainly not mine, you know, for that kind of character." I said, "Yeah, I would feel more comfortable wearing a pair of jeans and carrying a bone to the ring than I would something like that." And then the Vince McMahon Sr., he said, "Man, that's a great idea." He said, "Next TV, you should bring a bone and a pair of cut-off pants, and we'll call it something." And he kept talking around, and everybody kept telling me, they said, "You remind me of Moondog Maine." And I'd never met Moondog Maine but once in Texas. You know, it was kind of the end of his career, I think, and beginning of mine. We kind of crossed paths, but I said, "You know, that's fine with me." And next was it was Rex and King, the Moondogs. We made the debut there at the next New York TV in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and then went on to Reading, Pennsylvania after that. I mean, yeah, Reading, Allentown and Reading was the TV new TV town. They did TV in those stations.
Did you enjoy working up there?
I did, but man, it was so different from down south. Trips was long, it was hard. It was humongous arenas, like sometime for 3 or 4 days. It was like Boston Gardens, Madison Square Garden, you know, Syracuse, Buffalo, huge arenas, and then all of a sudden they give you a spot show like Albany. You know, what is this all about? Or some little high school gym in Staten Island, New York, you know, and it was just like trying to get around to some of those places. It was an all-day thing just getting from one town to the next, pretty much. You had to leave. You know, you didn't have very much time. Most everybody lived in Connecticut at that time, but you didn't have very much time at home. You was on the road just about. I asked Lou Albano. He was our manager at the time, and I said, what time do we need to leave for this? He 3:30, 4 o'clock? He said, no, we better leave about 12:31. I went, what? You know, and he wasn't lying either. We went, I forgot where it was, Sheephead Bay, I think, in Long Island, New York, one time. Looking at it on a map, I said, just barely over 100 miles from Connecticut. Man, it was a different story when it was hard to drive through all.
How long were you up there?
Still with us, Randy? Man, lost him. Yep, we dropped him. Let me try and get him back on the line.
All right.
He's traveling. I feel bad about having him on the phone with us.
Hello?
Hey, Randy, I'm sorry we dropped you.
Oh, it's probably me. I'm in just a bad location. Where was I at in the conversation?
I asked you how long you were
there. He was asking how long you were in New York.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jerry. Ask him.
I said, how long were you up there, Randy, in New York?
Oh, about a year. And then we left and went to South Africa. And that's when we went through the thing. After about 4 months, Sailor White went to Canada, and he couldn't cross back. They held his passport up, and he couldn't get out of Canada. So Vince Sr. gave him, like, about, I don't know, 6 weeks or so to get everything straightened out, and it was just... One sad story after another. Finally, he said, look, we're going to have to find you another partner. This guy, I don't know what happened to him. So, yeah. Next thing you know, Larry comes to TV. And me and Larry, he was from Tennessee. I was from Alabama. We got along much better than what me and Sailor did. It wasn't that me and Sailor wasn't enemies. It's just that he was a Newfoundland-type personality, and I was a Southern boy. So, you know, and that's just, you know, if the other guy would have been from Newfoundland, things would have been different, but it just worked out. Me and Larry just clicked, and we worked together real good for a long time. I think we set records all along Memphis territory, and
did you work
pretty
Vince
much
Jr.?
Everywhere. Huh?
Did you work with Vince Jr.?
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys kind of crossed over when Vince Sr. sold out and retired.
Yeah, we worked for Vince Jr. He didn't, I don't know what the thing was, but he had his own ideas, who he wanted and what he wanted to do, and me and Larry just was not included. But at the same time, the money was too good just to walk away from, you know, when everybody else was on their last leg. All territories in the country was, you know, they was like 16 territories, I think, one time, and you could just go from one to the other. But New York, man, we was making decent money up there, you know, really good, and compared to everybody else was just getting by. And we was flying and driving in Lincolns, and, you know, and got knocked out of the top spot, but at the same time, there was so much money going on, and it was hard to, you couldn't just walk out of it, you know.
Now, you also there briefly, I guess, for a week or two, were part of the demolition team.
Yeah, not long. Yep, not very long. It was, there was too many people. Well, there was some guys that used to go to Allentown and different ones. The same ones that started the thing going boring. And they just changed the whole face of wrestling. And everybody would get nervous when they would start their little chant. They'd start the boring. Every time somebody'd get a hold, they'd start a little chant going. Then everybody'd jump up and try to do something, you know, to kind of please. And it was only four guys. Instead of ejecting them out of the building, that thing just went across the country to everybody, no matter what town we went into. If you ever got a wrestling hold on somebody, all the fans would start boring, you know, and it just went on from there. And that was the ones that pretty much cost me the position as demolition. They was hollering, you know, that's Moondog, and, you know, because of all places for me to start a new gimmick. The first night was in the Meadowlands, and the second night was in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hershey, Pennsylvania, excuse me. Towns that I'd been in for 10 years. So, you know, the next TV was in Tampa. If I'd have waited till the next TV, you know, it would have been much easier. Nobody would have probably recognized me, and everything would have been a lot different, but that's just, you know, hindsight's 20/20. I didn't think it would. I thought I could change everything as much. So, just one of them things, you know.
Well, so did you just lose your job totally, or did they offer you something else?
It wasn't the same position as what the demolition had.
Right. Right.
That's when I become the shadow. And it wasn't very much. So, you know, I wasn't a shadow very long, maybe just a few months, and then I just let that go. I'd had it by that time and was looking for something else to fall back into.
Now, there was another name that I came across, or I've come across, and I never have been able to confirm that this was you or not. Randy the Mountaineer. Was that one of your guys?
Yeah.
Where were
you? Oh, man, that was in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay.
Louis Tillett was up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I talked to Louis. I knew him for a few years before that. And the ones that was in Knoxville that I worked with up there, I worked with Austin Idol a lot. Tommy Rich was coming in and out. And then Kamala was, before he was Kamala, James Harris was up there.
Right.
And I forgot, Bad News Harris or something like that, I think what they called him.
Bad News Harris, yeah.
Yep. And it was me and him. And I'll never forget one time Louis Tillett had a battle royal, and they had a bear in a battle royal, and Louis Tillett come up with a thing. He said, "I want everybody to get together and throw the bear out first." But he didn't tell the bear that.
Oh, geez.
Tommy Weathers, I will never forget that night, was trying to get the bear out. He was over there, and that bear slapped him so hard. He went across the ring into the ring ropes, and I looked, and I went, oh, man. I couldn't believe it. It was like something out of a movie, a special effects scene or something. That bear just, like, lifted Tommy right up off the floor. And I looked back, and the bear was coming at me, and I went, oh, no. And we got in the corner, and I was hollering for Kamala, James Harris at the time, and he took about two steps toward me. The bear turned around, and that was it for him. He was gone. So the bear pretty much cleaned house. Everybody got afraid of the bear. You know, he just got scared, I think, or frustrated, or everybody trying to pick him up and put him out of the ring. And so he just started acting really bearish. So when everybody started to find out in a hurry how strong that them bears was and how mean they could be, and everybody found a way out of the ring. And Louis was about to pull his hair out going, somebody get back in there. No, it ain't me. Not tonight.
Oh man. And then from there you went to Jerry's favorite territory, Bill Watts. He was the nightmare and then the champion.
Yeah, that was in 1985. I went in there as a champion with Eddie Gilbert as my manager. And then it became the nightmare. Well, yeah, the nightmare afterwards. And me and Eddie went to became partners, and we had a pretty decent run in there as the tag team champions. So, I had the tag, the single belt, the North American belt, for a while as a nightmare, as a champion. And then when me and Eddie Gilbert became partners, we became the tag team champions. So it all worked out good. So, you know, and me and Eddie Gilbert was friends. Oh, the trips was awful. I remember one time we had come back from somewhere in Oklahoma, and the kids was, and about half of us was living in Shreveport, Louisiana, and the kids was out catching their school bus, going to school, when we was pulling in there trying to find a place to park that already got good daylight. And we had to leave at 2 o'clock going to New Orleans because we had to get set up for making interviews. So, I mean, it was like 8 o'clock getting home and time you got in bed. You didn't get to sleep but about maybe 4 or 5 hours. You had to get up and get everything ready and whatever you had to do. And head out toward New Orleans. So that night, getting in, it was really, really hard. So, yeah, you know, and it was really bad about they would book a town in Oklahoma, and the next night you'd be in Louisiana, and the next night you'd be back in Oklahoma. And it seemed like that they would just zigzag that way. And them towns in Oklahoma might not be but 75 miles apart. But in the meantime, you had to come back to Louisiana to make some little spot show, whatever, hole in the wall, but, you know, and then go back. So
you're talking they was killer miles trips. Apart. They were 350 miles apart.
Yeah. They was real close town sometimes, but you had to make the trip back. Anyway, so, I mean, it was horrible. It was, the trips were just unbearable almost. Same way that Nick Gulas' territory was the first time that me and Jim Dawson worked there. It covered 7 states. It wasn't saturated all through the state, but you had to buy a wrestling license in Missouri, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama. I don't know if he run a Georgia town or not. You had to buy them in Kentucky, Illinois, Indiana, Evansville, Indiana. It was 7 sets of licenses that you had to buy, and depending on, like, you might make all of them that first week, man, that'd tear your paycheck up the time you bought all the licenses.
And then you and Gilbert were together there. Then was he booking Continental when you came in there?
Yeah.
You worked at Detroit Demolition?
Yep, that was.
But you got to do the demolition gimmick after all, just in a roundabout way.
Yeah, it wasn't the same as doing it in New York, but you know, it was kind of like a pacifier. it was still doing it, you know, but not like it could have been. But you know, if Vince had really got behind the demolition thing like he did without me, but I did the thing down in Alabama and stuff in the Continental Territory. It wasn't New York. And that was a bad thing. If you wanted to work in New York and you was trying to get on top there to make the big money, you'd burn a lot of bridges and let a lot of opportunities go. And I was in Japan with Andre, and he wanted me to stay with him. I had like 2 weeks off, I think. Send us down southern parts. Just stay down, we'll take care of you, put you in a hotel, and then you make this 4-week trip and go home. I went for the 3-week trip, and I was going to stay 2 weeks down there, and then instead of going home, just stay with Andre, and we was just going to lay up on the beach, and it sounded like a great opportunity to get. I finally got my foot in the door in Japan, and I remember Sakaguchi, he was like the one under Inoki. Come over one night, and he was making the payoff to everybody, and he was telling me, he said, "You're going to go with Andre down to so-and-so and so-and-so," and I said, "No, I got to go home because I'm starting in New York." He didn't say one word to me about it was a bad career move or anything. Didn't. Only thing he did was just close his book and got up and left. I had no idea. So I burnt that bridge for Japan because that's when WWF was going to try to take Japan. And also, I was supposed to went into the Carolinas when they was doing pretty fair at the time, and Dusty was doing really good in there. I was going to do a thing with Uvalde Slim in the Carolinas, and the door got closed on that deal. So. And then when I went back into New York, it was like, so what are you doing back here? So. it was just a bad situation. After you burn all the bridges, they look at you like you're a redheaded stepchild sometimes.
Well, Bobby's going to tell us about... the time you two worked on Dolphin TV. He's mentioned that several times here.
Hey, I'm sure it was a historical milestone in both our careers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It was amazing. I wished I had a tape of that.
Oh, yeah. The most fun I ever had around Randy was the night, and you may remember this, they double-booked Jody, and he had to go to Knoxville. And they sent me to Athens as your partner, and we worked.
Yep.
We worked as the assassins against Lars and Ole.
Yeah.
And I backed Ole in the corner, and I told him, I said, "I've been waiting 10 years to do this." that was fun that night.
Yeah.
I have a whole new respect for the guys that did that assassin gimmick, because wearing that silk mask like Jody wore,
oh,
that's like
awful.
Working in a fishbowl.
Yeah, it was awful. You know, and one night we looked at the thermometer in Dothan, Alabama, and this was like in August, and it was when it got hot there and muggy.
Oh.
I mean, it was hot. And right there inside the dressing room door, the thermometer said 107. I said,
mm-hmm.
"You got to be joking! You'd sweat so bad, you'd have to get up and turn your chair over every once in a while to let the sweat drip off out on the floor. You know, where you wouldn't just be sitting in a pool of water.
Oh.
And come back and take off as much stuff as you could and try to get some air. But you know, you couldn't get any air because we were wearing that." In the long sleeves, man, it was just like it was like one of those workout suits.
Yep.
It was awful.
That's your brother calling now.
Yeah, that building was, we've all talked about it because we've all worked in that building. Well, first of all, it wasn't air conditioned. Even that they ran those big fans, all that did was stir the dust. And the Heels dressing room was so small anyway. Once you got five people at the pool, and then they roll up that big door at the back end. And they didn't do anything but let more heat in.
And you know, and you could look around at the people. I've seen the girls come in all looking really, really pretty, and about bell time you'd look and all the mascara and the makeup.
Oh yeah. Look,
they had a hard time,
Rick. Oh.
You can imagine how hard that was for the wrestlers to be trying to put on a show for everybody and be productive and in that kind of heat and in that kind of condition. It's a wonder somebody didn't die.
Yeah. And you know, not only Dothan. Now, Dothan was a big building, but, you know, there was a lot of them little buildings like that. You know, we used to, when I was down there, we'd go to New Brockton on Saturday night. It was the same kind of deal, but it was much smaller.
Yeah, it was. And that New Brockton was a hot little town.
Yep.
And I will never forget one night, Ron Fuller was down in New Brockton, and we was all standing out there watching the match because it was heating up pretty good, and we was wondering if the guy was going to get out and make it back to the dressing room all right. And it was where they had the cattle auction or something there. They had a steel gate, and a redneck boy got to looking at Ron. He reached over and shoved that gate shut, and he put his hands on the rail. And Ron said, "Oh, man, we got to go hit the ring." And he kicked that gate open, and it swung back and hit that guy right across the fingers. And the guy held his fingers up, and they had to have been broken all to pieces because he was just looking around at everybody with his fingers pointing every direction. Oh, man, we got to go. Somebody's going to get killed here.
That territory was a fun place. Now, when you and Jim were in there for Fields in the early 70s, you were working that program with Frank Dalton.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole thing, I mean, Fargo had been Jack Dalton in there just a couple years earlier, but nobody ever put two and two together. And that was another thing. You and Jim wore those cut-off jeans and sweatshirt. And I know that had to have been hot, too.
No.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody was just trying to survive and get by, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, what was, other than New York, because of the money, what was your favorite territory that you worked in?
Probably Memphis. We had a real good run in Memphis, and I loved the Memphis territory. And Larry, that was his favorite town, was Memphis. Of all the towns in the country, he'd rather work Memphis territory, and his favorite town in the territory was Memphis, Tennessee, because it wasn't far from where he lived. And for him to work on top in there and be making money and drawing money and setting records, that was a real high point in the career for both of us.
I'm trying to think. You and he had not necessarily teamed before, but you guys were in Mobile at the same time. He and Fergie were down there when you were doing the Real Rip Tyler thing. He and Fergie were there as the Cajuns.
Yeah.
So you knew Larry from that before you guys teamed, so you had been around him a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I didn't know him real well, just a little bit. I think him and Carl Fergie come down there as the Raging Cajuns, I believe.
Yep, the Raging Cajuns.
Yeah. And I remember the first time I seen Larry, I said, "Boy," I said that little fat boy right there can hustle. And the next thing they told me, and they said Larry Lathan, and then I went, "Yeah, I remember him." And they said, "That's who we're bringing in." And I walked into New York TV, and he was there. and had went from working in a nothing happening spot in Louisiana, just being on the card, you know, among many other matches, and to work, you know, the semifinal event, the, going up there, and I first time I met him at TV, I gave him a pair of Moondog pants, a bone, and one of the tag team belts, and said, "Work on New York." He got his first paycheck. They paid you for every night. And I forgot what it was. We worked TV in a couple of towns and Philadelphia and stuff like that. And they paid him, like, he said, "Well, money ain't as good as what I thought it was going to be." I said, "What'd you get?" He said, $800. I said, "You got to be joking." I said, I looked and I said, "That's just for Philadelphia." He went, "No shit." Then everybody started following us around, bringing the payoffs to the other, for the other towns. And he started going, "Damn," he was walking around with his money in a bag. Afraid to put it down. He tried to put it in his boot, and he had such a wad. I said, "You know, you're going to have to give it to somebody to keep or something. You know, you can't put all that in your boot." it just don't look right. I said, "Just go to the bank and get your money order." But, you know, it was like weeks before we get back home sometime. So time you'd come back home, you'd be accumulated $5,000-$6,000 out on the road, and just be trying to stick it somewhere.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of problem everybody should have, you know. But
yeah, exactly.
At the same time, that was why we couldn't leave later on when they didn't really have plans anymore for the Moondogs in New York. Just wanted to use us to enhance the other wrestlers. It was hard to leave on account of you were still making what it was, but a lot more than what everybody else was making.
And there was nowhere else really left to go either at one point.
Yeah.
Unless you went to some of the smaller territories that were still hanging
And we went to Puerto Rico, and they wanted us to come back there, and we did real good. We had a good run in Puerto Rico. But, man, when I left there, I said, "I never want to come back here again." I got so tired of having to fight every day. He was going to fight with somebody every day, you know. It's bad enough to have to go and work in the ring every night. But every day you had a run-in with somebody somewhere, no matter what you did.
it was a dangerous place. It really was.
It was. We was over there when the sailors got shot. That was at the Black Angus across the bridge. From my apartment, you could hear the shots. And we was up on the rooftop, and we was cooking some steaks up on the rooftop, and we heard the shooting going on when all the sailors got shot at when they was leaving the Black Angus. Gang members shot them when they was leaving. So right after that, the guys told us that the word out on the street is that y'all are next. So that pretty much sealed the deal right there. You know, it was time to go after that. And I was getting so fat down there too. You know, I'd never had weighed over. I was trying to stay under 300. And I got on the scales one time at the gym. Me and the Mongolian Stomper run to the gym from the Tanama Motel to where the Carib Hilton was. There was a gym on the top floor we'd go to. And we worked out an hour and 15 minutes. We run a mile and a quarter there. And I still weighed 324 pounds. So no telling what I was first thing that morning.
Well, do you keep in touch with anybody other than the reunions and that you go to, Randy? Do you keep in touch with anybody that you worked with over the years?
I had talked to Tommy Weathers a couple of times, and In fact, I talked to him just a few days before he died, and he was telling me about Don Carson coming up, and I asked him, I said, you got Don's number? He said, no, but give me a call back in a couple of days or next weekend. And I tried to call him on the weekends on account of his, he had cell phone rates that was goofy. Anyway, the weekends didn't cost anything. I said, I'll tell you, I'll call you next weekend. And I got a call before that weekend that he'd already passed away. And I went,
yeah.
No. But me and Tommy had worked together. I set up with Tommy that night that he'd come down to the Mobile territory. It was in Dothan, Alabama, where we was at. And we had to go to Dothan TV the next morning, New Brockton that night. And that was the night that Tommy's wife had got, somebody had shot her or something happened. We didn't know really what the situation was at that time. But he just got an emergency phone call that he needed to come home right away. He had a bad family situation. He tried to call home. He didn't get an answer. And he was about to go crazy. We finally stayed on the phone with the airports and got him a flight out early that morning into Knoxville. And it was something else. We had to pretty much stay up with him, and he went through hell that night, you know, pretty much.
Hmm.
He was a character, I tell you. Tommy was he talked about that bear swatting him. For those of that may be listening that don't know Tommy Weathers, Tommy weighed all of maybe 105 pounds.
Soaking wet. That was soaking wet and fully dressed with two rolls of quarters in his pockets.
Yeah. And jump up and draw back at anybody 300 pounds and just
That's what I had the privilege of speaking at his memorial service, Randy, and that's one of the things I said. I said one thing you never worried about when Tommy was with you was your back.
He was right there.
You knew he had it.
Yeah.
We did a deal on Atlanta TV one time where Jody pulled Wrestling 2's mask off and Tommy yanked his referee shirt off and covered up John's head.
Yeah.
And I got a copy of that tape around here somewhere. But, you know, Tommy was, you could count his ribs. I told him, I remember going to the dressing room after we shot the deal, and I told him, I said, Bubba, we just lost 25 rating points on the thing there. And he went, why? And I said, when you took your shirt off, you scared him to death, Bubba.
Yeah. I tell you, and they was no better person to be around, was he? You know?
Oh.
I made, I don't know how many trips with him. And David Schultz, he used to call him Tidy Tommy. You know? He'd stop and get his little six-pack of beer, and he'd get the pop tops and everything. He'd keep everything in his sack, and when he got out of his car, he'd take everything with him, you know? He didn't leave a mess in your car. You know, like some guys that eat and drink and, you know, kind of get belligerent and make a mess and didn't want to clean it up. You never had that problem with Tommy. He'd always, you know, he was a gentleman everywhere he went.
Yeah, he was a good guy. We it's sad to lose him. We lose too many of them, but the ones that you spent time with, and I was fortunate enough to work around Tommy too a little bit when I was working for Fuller in 1981, and they had done a deal with him that had turned him into a heel manager.
Yeah.
And he was used to referee heat and everything, but that deal kind of scared him a little bit because it didn't last too long, and he headed back up to Knoxville.
Yeah.
Those people down there believed.
Well, you know, I think it's whatever you get used to.
Yeah.
Like I got used to the people in Puerto Rico just pretty much acting like an idiot every night. And you had to fight. Somebody's trying to get in the ring. And I will never forget one night to show you how that the people have, what kind of respect that they have for human life. It was at the baseball park one night, Roberto Clemente Coliseum or something like that, the big baseball stadium.
Yeah.
And there was a guy got stabbed, and he was laying on a table. It wasn't an announcer's table. It was another table over by the fence, and he was stabbed, and I was looking, and I seen the handle of a knife sticking up, and the guy was pouring blood, and he was just gasping for breath, and I was looking, and the referee said, "Come on, start the match." And I went, "This guy's dying right over here. Somebody needs to do something." And then I was watching when the guy took his last breath and just kind of collapsed. And the referee said, "Start the match, start the match." And they was ringing the bell. And I was going, "I can't believe this." You know, and the guy's just died laying right here beside the ring, you know, got a knife sticking out of him. And everybody's just watching the match going on. And it was just, it was pretty much just mind-blowing. How everybody would react to a situation like that. And then go to a place like Japan when everybody would clap when the match was over with and get up and walk out. It was pretty nice about everything. It was just like night and day difference, the difference between the Japanese people and the Puerto Rican people. So
Bill Eady told me the story about when he first broke into business working the Mongo gimmick.
Yeah.
He said they were at Pittsburgh doing a TV show there, and he said they worked a match, and it was 2 out of 3 falls. And he said after the first fall, he said they had some pretty serious heat, and a guy on the front row had a heart attack and died right there, and just boom, it was over. So he said they went to the dressing room between falls, and he said when they come back out for the second fall, he said he was absolutely shocked that the seat was empty where the guy had died, but all the guy's family was still sitting on the front row.
And he
said the police told him, said they said, "Well, there's nothing we can do for him. He's dead, but we want to see how this match comes out."
Oh,
and he said
God.
That was his first taste of how wrestling fans really were about wrestling.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't remember her name. I could see her in my mind. She used to come to Carrollton, Georgia all the time at the old building. And the real old building, I know they call the new.
You talking about Granny that sat on the front row?
Yeah.
Used to beat on the ring?
Yep. The building where Mr. Butner used to promote wrestling.
Yes,
yep.
Sir.
It used to be at the fairground or something like that, out by the Carroll Lake.
Yep.
And that Granny beat on the day that her husband died. They buried him that day, and she come to the matches that night.
Yep.
I mean, she just lived for it.
Yep.
And
I was over in Carrollton about a year ago. I went over, a guy did some TV taping over there, and he asked me to come over and help him do some commentary on his TV.
Uh-huh.
And a young man walked up to me, and he said, "You don't know me." He said, "I was just a little bitty boy when you know how that goes. I was just a little bitty boy when you used to referee." He said, "But my grandmother was the lady y'all call Granny that used to beat on the ring."
Oh,
and he told
man.
Me, he said, "I just wanted to tell you how much joy you brought to her life." He said, just what you said, she lived for Saturday night.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't know if the people really knew how much you loved them people. It was that way, the hardcore wrestling fans.
Oh,
like that. I mean, you couldn't help but like, you know, you just had to love them. You know, they just loved what they was doing. If they thought they could just say something and, you know, and break your train of thought or something like that, just like would make their day. And you put them over just a little bit, like they kind of got you frustrated. Oh, man, and you could just see it pouring out of them sometimes. Like, oh, I got him going now. He heard that.
Well, the best example I've ever heard of that, and Bobby can tell this story better than I can, was when Rocket Flash, was it Griffin, Bobby, that they were working the program with Tom and Jody?
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy that was always in Rocket's face.
Help me out, I'm drawing a blank.
they were working the program. The guy was always after Rocket. He was always standing up in the chair and beating on the chairs and yelling at Rocket. And when Rocket and Flash were working the program with the assassins, he walked up to Rocket and said, "I'm never going to cuss you again." you remember the story now?
No, you got me. I'm drawing an absolute blank.
Maybe Rocket told me directly himself. But anyway, after they finished the program with the assassins, they went on to working with somebody else. The guy was right back there the next week, cussing Rocket. After swearing to him, don't cuss at him again.
working with Jody was a big learning experience with me. The timing and how he done things. And because my gimmick before that was Randy the Mountaineer from Knoxville. And then when I went in and they said, "Well, you're familiar with the assassin gimmick and Jody needs a partner." And I was scared to death when I was going in there. And he said, "Well," I said, "don't be afraid, buddy. We're just going to do this and this and this and this." And it was just like smooth as silk. I mean, just everything he did was just like smooth. And he's got to be one of the best guys to work with as a partner. When I hurt my back real bad the one time, I think I told you about when I was having to go to the chiropractor on my hands and knees. I hurt my back real bad, and he took such care of me. Nobody ever realized that he was the only one that was ever in the ring, the way that he set up everything and did it, you know. So he took care of me just like we was brothers, you know. Because I was scared. I said, "Boy, what am I going to do? And my back's messed up. I can't work and I can't do this." And, "Oh, don't worry about it. I got it," you know. And we'd go through, you know, like 15-minute matches, 18 minutes, somewhere along in there. And I'd never even get in the ring. I'd just stay in there. He'd work something out to where I didn't have to. Maybe come in just for a second or two, and that was it. You know, he was something else. Well, it still now, is, you know. I mean,
was that you with him or Roger with him when they did the when Ole did the big turn in the Omni in the cage match on Dusty?
Oh. That was me and Jody that worked with Ole a lot in the Omni. And Roger come in the night that I did the you saw the Slim thing, and then I thought he was going to come back after that, and then I didn't hear from him for months and months and months, you know. So,
you know, the angles are talking about the big match they had in the Omni where Ole was a babyface at the time. He was teaming with Dusty, working against the assassins, and I'm assuming it was you and Jody. And they had two referees. They had Ivan Koloff and Gene Anderson. And then everybody, where Ole turned on Dusty, and it wound up like 5-on-1 in that cage.
Yeah.
That was one of the best angles I think I've ever seen. And that place came unglued. That was you then, with Jody that night?
Yeah. Yeah.
How scary?
When I went into it. Oh, God, it was scary. I was trying to go get in the ring. I was used to, I wanted everything. I wanted to know what everything was going to be, what everything was choreographed, and how everything was going to be put together. And Jody looked at me and he said, "It ain't going to be anything like that." He said, "Who knows?" You know, and then we got the bell rung, and it was just like, what do you call it, just mayhem everywhere. It was Ole and Dusty, and we was in the ring, out of the ring, you know, just, it was kind of like, it would get you ready for a Moondog type match. I will never forget one time, my idol from long, long, long time back was Bruno Sammartino before I ever got in the wrestling business. And it was a real honor to work with his son when I did and meet Bruno in person. And he did the commentary on some of the matches. And I seen him, he worked a few of the shows. And he was looking, they used to bring all the wrestling magazines when they come out every month. they put a stack of them on the table. And he looked at me one time. He said, "Are you this guy right here?" And I said, "Yeah, that's me." He said, "What about this guy?" I said, "Yeah, that's me." He said, "What about this one?" I said, "That's me." So he looked around and he went, "Ah, wait." It was kind of a compliment in a way, you know, the way that he did that. But he was just like, he said, "You're all these people, and what are you doing? Who are you going to be?" I said, you know, I was always in that situation that I got tired of playing the same part so much. I wanted to change up. So, and I did. Maybe too much.
Yeah, I think it's neck and neck with you and Don Fargo and Stan Fraser. So who had the most gimmicks in the rest of
it? Yeah.
I took
Oh, man. Yeah. Frank Morrell looked in my trunk one time, and I was moving, and he said, "What is that?" I said, "That's I started naming the different outfits that I had, who I was, and everything." He went, "I believe you got me beat." Oh, man.
I think you hold them too. Randy, I know you're on the road, so I'm going to wrap it up so you can get home safely and everything. I'm glad everything's okay with your family as well as to be expected for that situation. I appreciate you joining us tonight and everything. And we'll definitely have to have you on again when you can leave.
I enjoy it. And just give me a call anytime you need anything like that. Just give me a call. I'll be glad to do it. I'm sorry that I'm on my cell phone. I wished I was at home, but you know, it's just one of the things that nobody expected to happen.
I understand, and I'm glad everything's
Give me a call, and I'll call you in a few days, Bobby. How about that?
Sounds good, Randy. I look forward to it.
I will. Have a good day now.
All righty.
Take care, Randy. Thank you. What a great guy. God, can you imagine all the places he's been? Where did you live in Louisiana, dear, when you were there?
Shreveport.
You stayed in Shreveport, too?
Right.
At one time, Jerry, didn't the guys all live in Tulsa? Or do they always stay in Shreveport in that territory?
There were some that lived in Baton Rouge, Bobby.
Oh, okay.
They could have lived in Tulsa, but the ones that lived in Baton Rouge, they worked mostly the south end, but
okay.
I worked both ends, so I kind of split the difference.
Okay.
I think what you may be thinking about, Bobby's back when it was more McGurk than when
I guess that's what when McGurk was running it, I guess I was that was basically he kind of stayed in Oklahoma, I guess.
Yeah,
but really,
I mean, Louisiana was part of it too. But before Watts, kind of, I think when Watts came to Georgia during the war, and then went into Florida, and then he kind of used that as a bargaining chip when Leroy wanted him back. He wanted a bigger piece of the pie, and I think that's when they turned Louisiana and Mississippi mainly over to him, and then it finally branched out, and he wound up starting Mid-South and bought Leroy out, or at least bought out that end of it. And I think
when I was there, as far as Oklahoma, we only really ran thoughts of Oklahoma City.
Then you guys go into Wichita Falls and
not when I was there.
Yeah, so I'm thinking back in the early 70s, back when, you know, when Watts first started up there, when Danny Hodge was still real big, and Mantell and Tom Jones and guys like that were, you know, bigger names, and Chuck Carbo and people like that.
We worked Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
Okay.
It was big.
That is big.
It's a big territory. Yeah, but at one point...
Everybody went out there got guaranteed a new car.
You must have one when you get there.
If you was going home, you're going to have one.
You're going to need another one when you...
Golly.
Ooh. But you know, when you... I I'd always heard about it, and I said I'd never go there. Of course, I wound up going. But, you know, once you got there, you know, it was... You got kind of got in the groove, and but he kind of took care of me. You know, I talked to him before I went out there, and then he flew me out there. He said, just come out here and do TV and see what you think. And I told him, I said, man, I heard about those trips. I said, I'll take care of it. And he did. He flew me, and he paid for, you know, my flights. And but you could be in Houma, Louisiana on a Sunday night. And the next night you're in Tulsa. That's 700 miles to the next town. But I would drive from like Houma, Louisiana. I mean, that's down in the bayou. I mean, it's down in there. And then I'd drive to Shreveport that night back home and get up, leave at 12 the next morning to go to Tulsa. I mean, you was on the road, man.
You know the thing about it, if you had, and you know, Randy was talking about traveling with Larry, if you had somebody to travel with that you got along with, you know, I don't miss the running up and down the roads, but that's the part of the business I think I miss the most is the camaraderie that we had in the cars. I mean, riding.
Right.
I mean, it was, you know, that was, because if you had good people with you that, you know, I mean, the trips didn't seem that long, no matter how far it was.
But I know many a night I'd leave New Orleans on a Thursday night and head back to Shreveport. I'd get home like at 2:30, 2:45, by myself. I did a lot of miles out there by myself, which it didn't bother me to ride by myself.
You probably like you better than you do anybody else anyway.
You know, I've kind of thought that myself.
Well, I mean, I say that, you know, I tell people this, and it's funny. I tell people this at church, and it's facts. The way the good Lord made us. If we're at peace with ourselves, we like us better than we like anybody.
Well, Bobby, that was the whole thing. You know, I did not have to be, you know, some people, I mean, not that I'm a loner, but to, like, be by myself, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, we've never point blank talked about this, but I'm sure your philosophy was the same as mine. I was very careful who I rode with or who I let ride with.
Let me tell you something.
I'm not going to jail for some other clown.
I would not ride with, well, I did a few times. I would not ride with guys that were drinking and driving.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a hard deal to pull off back then.
Yep.
I mean, I've seen guys drink 12 packs on the way home.
Uh-huh.
See, I know what drinking does to me. I fall asleep. So I can honestly say I never made a trip when I was driving on the road and I had anything to drink. That was me.
Yeah.
That was my thing, But I'm surprised more guys didn't lose their lives out there.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't you?
As many miles as has been logged by professional wrestlers through the history of this business across this country, the numbers that have died, and we always hear about it, and they're always horrific, and it's always generally two or three guys because they're traveling together. But based on pure numbers, man, it's relatively
low. Bobby, the numbers are nothing.
Low.
Really?
Yeah, they're nothing compared to the miles it's been logged.
I mean, we could go years and nobody would be killed in a car.
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah.
I guess the worst one was up in, Tennessee with Sam Bass and Pepe Lopez.
Yeah.
And Frankie Hester.
Yeah.
Oh, that they said that was absolute. They said that was just hideous.
The worst one I was ever directly, and I say directly, I guess the worst one that I was ever nearby or around, was Kissy, Doug Scoggins.
Oh God, him and Cortez, wasn't it Cortez?
What was his name? Juan Caruso.
Juan Caruso.
Caruso lived next door to Rocket. I was about 16, I guess. I was still in school, and I was with Rocket, and we were going. Rocket had picked me up so that I could ride to Augusta with him. And Wayne Cowan and Kissy were roommates, and Wayne had called and wanted to catch a ride to Augusta. Me, I was in the back seat, and of course, like I say, I was just a kid. But Rocket and Wayne's in the front seat. We went to Augusta, but you had to leave for Valdosta. You had to leave at 3:30 because it was a 4-hour trip.
Exactly.
And then you didn't have to leave till about 4 to go to Augusta. And we were getting ready to leave about 4 o'clock, and Kissy pulled in to pick Caruso up. And he was 30-40 minutes late picking him up. So Charlie Smith has told me it was the first week, and it was on a Monday, and they, of course, guys that got paid that morning, it was the first week that Kissy ever made $1,000 for a week.
And did you know he had a starting date in New York?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he did.
Jeez.
He was going to go to New York.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, you're right about the $1,000. I remember that.
But that was...
He was a good kid.
Yeah, nice guy. Nice guy. I remember me and Rocket dropping Wayne off at that apartment that night. Man, I felt so bad for Wayne having to go into that, because they had... Evidently, they broke into business together and had been buddies or something, and they shared that apartment. And I can remember thinking just
did
how...
Did he know
how,
that before he left, Bobby?
Do what?
He didn't know. Did he know that? He didn't know that before he left.
What's that about the wreck?
Yeah.
No, I'm saying the wreck happened. We left going to Augusta. We found out about it when we got to Augusta.
Okay.
Tom called. Tom was in Valdosta. Tom went by and found him, or I'm not sure what the deal was, but Tom called Augusta and told Charlie Smith, and Charlie told them, and Rocket motioned for me, and I walked over by the stage, and he told me what had happened. But
like you said, for the miles that was put in,
yeah, that's just,
and the lives that were lost, it's almost nothing for the miles.
Yeah.
And how many guys was on the? I mean, when all these territories were cooking, how many guys were on the road at one time?
Oh yeah.
At a given like 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh yeah.
It's just, if you look at it like that, you just. And the mob.
If you look at the things also involved, you know, most of the guys drank or were just distracted by something or other. And how many wrestlers do you know that ever drove under 100 miles an hour?
Oh. Listen, I probably made 100,000 miles worth of trips with John Walker. Me driving, him driving. I don't know if I ever scared him. He never scared me, never, until I made a trip, and it was probably the last one I made with him. We went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he had a Volkswagen Rabbit.
I remember that car.
Son, I got over there. That Rabbit didn't do nothing but hit the high spots on the road. He was running 100 miles an hour in this thing, and I was sitting over there, and I had my eyes closed. And I'd tell him every once in a while, John, I'm not asleep. I'm just afraid to look. And he thought it was funny.
You remember that blue, that Oldsmobile, he had the blue with a white top?
Is that the one that had the leopard seat covers?
That is correct.
Yeah.
We wrestled in, where were we? We in Lake Charles. It was in Lake Charles, Louisiana. We were going back to Baton Rouge. It was me, him, and Wahoo. I'm like you said, if he wasn't doing 100 all the way back to Baton Rouge, but Johnny was a safe driver. He just
drove fast.
I mean, he wasn't reckless by any means.
No.
But how he kept his license, I don't know.
And that car you're talking about, did he ever turn the bright lights on for you?
Yes, sir.
He had two airplane landing lights where the high beam headlights were.
I did that. When we were in Kansas City, I had a was a Buick 225.
Uh-huh.
And it had the four headlights, and I put aircraft landing lights where the brakes were.
Mm-hmm.
Friend, when you turn
like daybreak.
If Highway Patrol left me with those things on. But Johnny was a safe driver.
I think it was just the fact that car was so little. And it was a diesel, too. That was another thing.
That's right.
It was a diesel.
He was probably one of the, other than Ronnie. Of course, I don't know if you ever rode, I rode with Harley one time, and that was the last time I ever rode with him. But there were some guys that, they flew. Did either one of you guys ever know Jim Osborne?
Jim Osborne.
I know who he is. I've never met him.
I know the name.
Fred Osborne, Dr. X.
That is exactly who it was.
Yeah.
Did you know nobody would ride with him? You want to know why? We would come. I know I was catching a ride with Brian Blair and Gary Usher. Brian Blair was in his car. We was coming from Tulsa. It was 18 degrees that night. His heater went out. So all three of us are in the front seat. We passed Jim Osborne. He's got on a short sleeve shirt. The window's rolled down. His arm's hanging out of the window.
Oh, you're weak. I was bad about it, because everybody that ever rode with me, it never failed. I'd have four or five guys with me, and they'd all be sawing logs, and I'm fighting, trying to keep from going to sleep, and I'll roll the window down, no matter how cold it was, to keep myself awake.
Nobody rode with Osborne. Was you ever around him, Mike?
No. I just saw him as the strangest guy I've ever been around. Really?
So, did you ever cross him, Bobby?
I want to say yes, but I'm not. The name's real familiar, but I'm not sure.
That's the only place I ever saw him. And he wasn't there long.
He stayed in Oklahoma for McGurk for years, and he worked for Vern. They brought him up there when Dick Byer was doing the Dr. X gimmick in the late '60s, I guess it was, before he turned babyface, and they brought Osborne in as Double X. And, of course, he wasn't there but a couple of months and got unmasked, and then he took the Dr. X gimmick into Louisiana and worked as Dr. X down there. Yeah, he was the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion for a short time. And he came into Mobile, probably stayed in Mobile 4 or 5 months, and in 74, 75, something like that, worked a program with Ken Lucas and then left. But, yeah, he was a mainstay. Well, he had worked in Mobile without the hood, just as Jim Osborne in the '60s. And then he settled in Oklahoma. He and Duke Miller were a big tag team out there. They were called the King and the Duke. And that was another one. Duke Miller was he's the only one that I ever was, aware of as far as seeing him all the time. He had been in and out of Mobile for over 4 or 5 years, and then had just left Mobile and been gone from Mobile a couple months when he was gone down to Tampa and was killed in a car wreck down there. I don't know if either one of you were ever around him, Jerry Miller, Duke Miller.
I don't think I wasn't.
And I don't think he was in Mobile when you came through. I don't think he may have worked in Georgia in the early '60s, Bobby, before you ever got
there.
Jerry, I don't know if you ever crossed paths with him or not. Did we lose Jerry?
We may have.
He's still showing on the board, but this board's been acting weird tonight.
Hmm.
Oh, well. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I'm going to pack and turn in. I'm going to get up early in the morning. I got to drive to Philadelphia at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, again,
congratulations to Miss Spencer for making it through college. And try not to glow too much like a peacock this weekend.
Maybe from sitting in the sun, I may be glowing from sun.
I understand.
Well, you, where is it you're going? Kentucky or Tennessee?
I'm going to Corbin, Kentucky.
It could be worse. You could be going to Hazard, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to leave here about 9 in the morning and shoot up there, and I'll be home sometime Saturday night.
Well, somebody pick up Bo James. I'm sure he knows somebody in Corbin.
Well, he wanted to get me, tried to get me to come back to Kingsport Saturday night to a wrestling match over there, but I don't think Kingsport's between Corbin and Atlanta, so I think I'm coming to the house. So, but goodness, I'm actually running a revival Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at a church out in Mableton, so long few days ahead of me. So,
we'll be careful. And Jared, wherever you went, have a good weekend and good week, and we'll get together again next Thursday and see what kind of trouble we can get into.
Sounds good, sir. Have a great week.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.